97.5 The Fanatic.
Right now, we have on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast Coach Lynam, who I can also call Dad. Coach, what's going on? How are you today?
Hey, D, how you doing?
Doing all right. The bubble is up and running down there in Orlando. I don't know if you're like me, but I have been interested in just checking out video of the different teams' practices, seeing what people look like, and listening to some of the questions they're being asked about being in the bubble. Have you taken any time to check it out? I know they're not games yet, but it is up and running.
Yeah, I have not watched the video, D. I've been following it, you know, the different coverage and what have you. But I'm just anxious to see them start playing.
Absolutely. All right. I want to go to yesterday. We had a lot of discussion about, and it was because earlier in the week, Joel Embiid had talked that, one, he wants to get back to playing his dominant self, and he didn't think he had been that in the first part of the season, you know, before it shut down mid-March. And the other was for him to be at his best, he needs the guys around him, and he threw Al Horford in there as well, like he or Al. We need those guys to shoot. Do they have enough shooting on this Sixers team, outside shooting?
Well, it remains to be seen, D. I'm not going to say no. I mean, Korkmaz has had a very good year. He's up shooting, I'm going to say, right below 40%. If Shake Milton can continue what he was doing, I've heard you mention on numerous occasions the terrific run that, you know, he was on prior to the stoppage of play. But you really need those frontline guys. Like Tobias Harris, to me, probably is maybe he's as important as anybody. Maybe you could make the case the most important because he's going to have a volume of shots. And for him to shoot the way he's capable of shooting it, that would be a big deal. So I guess I'd answer your question by I think the potential to shoot well enough to address the weed, Joel's his point, I think it's there. Now it remains to be seen.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Tobias. Number one, he has attempted the most number of threes to this point in their season. He is shooting, I think it's a hair under 35%, but in his last month before they had to shut it down, that number was up to 42, which was more who he was when he played with the Clippers.
And yeah, remember what the numbers you just cited are right on, and he got off to a horrendous three-point shooting start. Not playing bad basketball, but he just was not making the three. And they do need him. You said a shade below 35. I haven't looked at the numbers, you know, as on a daily basis like I would when they start playing. But a little below 35 is a little below NBA average. Your expectation would be higher than that, obviously, for a player of Tobias's caliber. And particularly since he shot it so well, he was over 40%, well over 40, as a Clipper. And the Sixers, you know, when you have star power like Embiid or Ben Simmons, you know, who's going to penetrate and kick it, Joel, I mean, he's absolutely right that for him and for Ben to be as effective as they can be, you need people capable. And it's not, let me just add one thought, D. When somebody throws you a ball, usually like Joel gets double teamed, the shot clock is usually on its way down. So the guy that catches the ball, he's either got to be able to make a three, and I always add the following, or make a play. And it doesn't always have to be a three-point shot. You know, if somebody can drop their head, drive to the goal, and dunk a ball, all right, it's not three, but it's two in dramatic fashion. So in general, Joe's on target with his point.
And since you brought it up like that, when you're describing it like that, it is also him, without saying names, missing a little bit of what J.J. Redick gave you and Jimmy Butler gave him.
Without question. J.J. Redick, come on. You don't even have to go to the stats. He's one of the top three-point shooters every year. And if he gets an open three, it's close to automatic. It's going in the basket. And that's why those guys are so coveted. The Kyle Korvers of the world. What, Korver is entering his 30th year of play next year if he decides to come back. There's always a job for guys like that for the reason you just said.
This morning, Brett Brown was asked about his rotation and figuring it out and who it would be, when it would be. and he said he was going to start with 10 and probably end up with 9. That seems high to me. When I look back at the teams, even if I look at Toronto last year, 8 is usually the number. But does it really make that big of a difference? Am I overthinking it if a guy wants to go 10 or 9 deep?
Well, you're certainly on target, G, that historically playoff basketball, is 8. But I don't quibble with somebody. Here's where I think you get into trouble as a coach. If you don't have a very defined idea, I don't think you can go from game to game in playoff basketball. Like, let's just make it up. Tonight, Korkmaz had a good shooting night from 3, so, he got the 20-plus minutes, and as a result, Shake Milton only got, 7 minutes. I think if you start fooling around with the minutes like that, where guys aren't getting their consistent minutes, then that can be a problem, particularly with young players. So I would rely on what Brett's final decision would be. It's not the end of the world if it's 9. But just that he would have a pretty set idea once the playoffs start. Now, the 8 games, obviously, do what you want. That's what the 8 games really are for, to kind of solidify in his and his coaching staff's mind, exactly who's going to be playing and who with whom, which is equally important.
Absolutely. Do you think the motivation will be there? I've had a couple callers like, do players just want to get through this? And I understand because the safety, health, I mean, there's a lot on the table for these guys to be dealing with, and there is sacrifice and there is risk. So do you think with all of that, the motivation to win the championship or, go as deep as you can will be there, and we will see it in the quality of the basketball?
It's a fair point, D. I say more than casually that one of the big things, that's for put the pandemic aside momentarily, that the distractions that the players are subjected to today compared to, let's say, when I was coaching, not even close, social media just as a starter. And now throw the pandemic in, and that belongs obviously on the top line by itself. That, yes, the potential for players being distracted and not, being able to kind of walk on to the court when they're ready to throw the ball up with, this is what's on your mind, this is the goal, win this game. I certainly could understand, and I'm not going to profess to speak for those guys. I would say this, that historically, that once the bell rings, I say once the gate opens, okay, but boom, you don't have to yell run. The thoroughbreds go. And that's what NBA players are by and large. Once they start playing, then they're into competing. So I think it will be a good product. Now, will it be the normal? And it's going to look visually, obviously, different for us. You're not going to have the crowd surrounding it and the TV panning, to some fan going crazy and what have you. But I think in terms of the actual play on the court, I think it will be high level.
97.5, The Fanatic.
It's funny you bring up that it will look different to us because I've been watching the basketball tournament. Now, those guys are playing, just trying to get to the end, single elimination, and your team wins $1 million, who's ever left standing. But they don't have any fans, and you can hear everything that they are yelling to one another, whether it's from the bench or guys on the court to each other. So somebody said, I wonder how much trash talking we're going to hear from the Orlando bubble. And I didn't ever really think about it, but until I then watched the TBT.
Right.
What do you think that ambiance will be like? And do you think guys will trash talk? Do they generally?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no question. And, there are certain guys who are renowned.
Larry Bird was one, right?
Yeah, believe it or not, Bird was one. I'll tell you another one, and they both did it in a similar fashion. Tim Duncan was one.
Whoa.
But you wouldn't hear them on TV. That's the way they did it.
I see.
It was audible to those to whom it was directed, period. That would be it. But no, I think you bring up a good point that can add a flavor if done properly from the, the TV perspective. And my guess is they would tap into that, the production people, because the potential for it, as you say, because it's so, it's going to be a quiet setting. You're going to readily hear, you know, what's being said out there. Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting part of it.
All right, Coach, our Twitter question of the day is, and it's kind of come up because I've been listening, and Keith Pompey actually wrote about it today. Tobias Harris has become very vocal on and off the court with things that have happened in the world, and also talking about this particular Sixers team, how they had played before everything got paused, and what he hopes to get out of them, or they hope to get out of the restart. And he's put a lot of energy into keeping the lines of communication open between teammates during the pandemic with Zoom calls and Instagram and whatnot. And he's mentioned that the chemistry of this group was not where it needs to be before they, you know, stopped playing mid-March. So my question on the poll is, can the leader of your team get you to a championship if that leader is not also the top talent?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say yes to answer the question directly, but your lead dogs, and obviously I'm referring to Joel and Ben, because they are the two on-court talent leaders of this team.
Yes.
They have to be on board. Yeah, they can't be like fighting, let's say, Tobias. Like, I'm supposed to be the spokesman. If Tobias is comfortable in that role, and I would agree with you, he certainly has been very outward in expressing himself, much more so, I think, now. I'll be curious, I'm asking you this question. It seems to me that he has been more of a spokesman now than prior to the pandemic. Not that he was silent, but more so now. Would that be accurate in your mind?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, okay. I would say absolutely also. So therefore, it has to be received in a positive manner by Ben and Joe. And my guess is that, yes, it would be. Now, that's it, me from afar. You know, nobody outside the inner circle would really, really know. But and some people, you know, might think you're making too big a deal out of this leadership thing. No, absolutely not. You know, groups have people who rise to the top and become the leaders of the group, whether you're stranded on an island as a group, like on TV, Survivor or whatever. I mean, that's real life. That's the way it works. And a group of people, almost by definition, they're looking for leadership.
Sure.
They want to know, what do you think? What are we going to do? How do we go about this? I think it can work. And I will say this, I'm becoming really impressed. I knew who Tobias was, but I just like the way he goes about his business. And I'm saying this from back since he arrived here in Philly. I think he's a class act. Obviously, he's a high-level player. I know some people debate whether he gets paid too much or not. He's a high-level NBA player.
And I'm going to add, I don't know if you would agree with me here, I think he was their most consistent through those however many games did they play, you know, 60, yeah, 72, whatever that number was.
I would agree. Certainly one of the most consistent for sure. And also, D, in terms of his role and how good is he, and should he, you know, I mean, it's irrelevant whether he should or shouldn't be getting paid what he's paid. That's not really the point. But I will say this. He's the third cog.
Yes.
He's the third wheel on this show.
Okay? Yep.
Pretty good third wheel.
Exactly.
I think I can make a fair point that there'd be teams that Tobias would be on in this league. Let's just take an ideal setting where you say he'd be the number two guy. I'm going to tell you something. He'd have a great chance of playing in many All-Star games as a number two beside a super. That's the level of player I think he is.
All right, Coach, and we've been talking a little about movies, because last night I walk in and my crew is watching a movie, and it turns out it was Hangover, which I don't know if you've ever seen or not seen, but it reminded me, years ago I was on the road, people wanted to go watch Hangover. I say to myself, that's just not going to be my kind of movie. I mean, it's just my kind. And I left that movie thinking it was hysterical, laughed so hard, felt so good watching it, and I watched my boys last night, felt the same way about the movie, and they didn't want to watch it either, similar to me back in the day. So people have been giving us movie examples that they've, you know, anticipated, not going to be great, but they were so pleasantly surprised. I know you're a late night TV guy. You got a movie for us that was pleasantly surprising?
Dee, you know, I went through a stretch, your mom and I, watching, we saw more good movies. I'll just pick one. Hidden Figures.
Okay. I haven't seen it yet, but it was a number of awards.
Maybe partly for the times that we're in, and you know, I'd heard about it also, and I hadn't, it was one of the early ones we saw. We watched the movie every night, literally for, I'm going to say, 6 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
If we missed a night, it was a big deal. And we had gotten out of the habit of seeing movies. And to your point, I was blown away by how many great movies there are. But, yeah, if I was going to name one, in fact, I have the list in front of me, because I jotted down on a little notepad here in my computer after each one we saw. But, yeah, Hidden Figures is a winner, stone winner.